You're listening to Death of the Reader. This is Hertz and Cameron. I am joined for your murder mystery world tour to discuss Aoife Clifford's It Takes a Town by our executive editor of the show, Cameron Furlong. Cameron, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, unwrapping me from the stasis pod that you keep me in.
Yeah.
And allowing me to use the tired and dusty voice that has never been heard in centuries. It's so happy to be here.
I'm pretty sure I've heard you around the station a little bit lately doing some shows, maybe even seen you around the office.
Yes, keen-eared listeners may know me from the Thursday Daily and that one episode of Death of the Reader, Undead.
Undead, yeah, it was great. I remember that. It was an excellent time. But today, you are not here as an equal. You are here as a victim of the show.
Because thank you.
You are in the hot seat. As I mentioned, we are covering It Takes a Town to Solve a Murder, .. And yeah, this novel by Aoife Clifford follows the murder of a famous star in a small town called Welcome. And so there are lots of awful jokes about the name and how you're always being welcomed to the town. It's called Welcome. It's a terrible, terrible bit. But this Vanessa, who is found at the bottom of the stairs in the Landridge guest house, I think is where it is. Look.
It's like a little cottage on a particularly affluent townsperson.
Yes, Landridge's house.
Landridge's house.
We're introducing him as a kind of cynical politician type, but also as the real estate agent, as he's known by his stepdaughter as well. Yeah. So there's a lot going on in this book, which I love. I would start with a discussion of our main character, but the problem is that much to the credit of the title, it does take a town to solve a murder.
It really does. Just as an aside, we're reading up to chapter 11.
Yes.
Full spoilers for those chapters.
I'm glad you remembered to tell people where we're reading up to.
You may say the words, but I've listened to you fools, and it's ingrained into my brain.
That's true. Yes, we are reading up to chapter 11 of the book. And yeah, there are a lot of chapters and a lot of characters in this book. And that's kind of what I love about it, that in order to solve this murder mystery, we're jumping back and forth between a lot of different perspectives. You know, we've got these best friends, it's kind of odd couple, Frankie and Mer, which is short for Mermaid, not Meredith. I don't care what the book says. We've got the cops in the town, Carol and Billy.
Carol being the new big city cop being transferred over as a new town sergeant.
Yes. She helicopters in, which is really fun. And of course, you know, just the rambunctious teenagers of the town, Danny and Jasmine and Brianna. Look, there's a lot of different perspectives in this novel. And I guess I want to open this up by asking you, Cameron, you have not finished the novel. That is my privilege at this moment. I want you to tell me who do you feel like the protagonist is right now in this moment?
Right now, I feel like the protagonist is Frankie just by merit of the number of storylines that intersect with Frankie. And for the majority of the book, we have been seeing it from her perspective.
There's some solid reasonings. Because I'll tell you what, when I first opened up the book, I felt like Carol was going to be our detective, you know.
Yes, yes.
Whether or not our protagonist, because she's been around the block a few times and she also has her finger on the pulse of the actual crime. You know, she's the first person to visit the crime scene, at least the first perspective to visit the crime scene, and promptly dismisses the whole thing, which I kind of love.
I think what is also interesting is her mindset coming in. I agree with you. It did seem like Carol was going to be our detective in this story. She's got the smart, she's got the experience. She comes in on a helicopter.
She does.
She's making all these astute observations about the people she meets. She seems very switched on, but it turns out that she doesn't really want to get involved in this investigation. In fact, she straight out says, you know, it's my first day. I'm not going to call in the homicide squad for something that honestly just looks like it's an accident.
But you need a spider. You know, you need a character to enthrall,
yes,
Carol and honestly the rest of these characters into the conspiracy. and that's Janet. She may be the best character. I don't know. I mean, I might say that Meredith is the best character, but Janet is up there. She's the old lady character in Murder Mysteries who always knows what's going on.
But no one asks her what's going on.
Nobody asks her, but in this novel, Janet is telling everybody what's going on. She's saying, I have this binder. I have this entire like database that I've been collecting for years of all the information.
It's in my mind palace.
It's amazing. She's like, if I ever die, in my left breast pocket, I have this little book that'll tell you exactly who's killed me. She says it must be somebody. There must be somebody who has killed poor Vanessa.
So Vanessa is the small town girl got big, you know. She was the town darling. People loved Vanessa. She starred in a very famous Australian biscuit commercial for Sugar Snap Biscuits. She was a child star. What's the quote that they use? She danced into our hearts.
Oh, yes.
Left the small town to make it big in Hollywood, got on a teen soap opera, did some other things, and then eventually found her way back to the small town where she grew up to start a part-time job as a drama teacher and to also work in her family's dance studio. And that is where we find Vanessa in the beginning of the book, in that lovely opening prologue of the talent show put on in support of Vanessa's cousin Beth, who is recovering from cancer. I thought it was a fantastically written prologue.
Are you planning on becoming one of the VBs, the grown adult men who follow this child star around? And
I'm not planning on coming a VB. I am a VB. From the first paragraph of this book, I am 100% invested in developing a parasocial relationship with this former child star.
I love it. I love it. And also in that vein, Frankie and Mer, they're like an odd couple, you know, where like they're best friends. They've been together forever, but Mer is leaving this wild. So Mer is short for mermaid because she drinks like a fish and she loves swimming, which I love.
She was a former swim champion of the town before she was taken down by some fairly serious shoulder injuries.
She injured her shoulder, and that's something that we'll learn more about as we go on. But for now, the important thing is that she had a dream to become big like Vanessa, and then she was struck down by happenstance. But she's completely totaled her life. She's ended up in a situation where she separated from her husband. She's drunk all the time.
She's a single mother with her older teenage son. She works at the local grocery store in the deli, slicing meat.
Frankie's home life is also not perfect. She seems to be having some problems with her son. She finds like a box of condoms in his sock drawer. It's kind of a funny situation, but it also like there's these little cracks that are appearing in her family relationship. Yeah. Her father, like there's a lot we could go into, but her father, she doesn't have the best relationship with it. It seems like her deadbeat best friend, Mer, has a better relationship with her father than she does.
That was so interesting.
Yeah, there's a lot going on there that we'll get into as we go. But the relationship between Frankie and Mer is, to me, like the best part of the book.
I think we should briefly discuss the Landridges.
Sure.
I think, yeah. Is it Landridge or Langridge?
Langridge. Landridge. I thought it was Landridge, but maybe I'm
Barton and Sherry Landridge with the stepdaughter Jazz and her friend Brianna. Just a real rich person type of vibe, you know.
They're obnoxious.
Yeah,
yeah. It's there's some insinuation going on with this family, especially with having a stepdaughter. There's the question of like how many decisions Barton is making to protect his own image as a politician.
Aoife, so aptly writes in her book, it would be so easy to make Barton the villain and blame everything on him.
Which is definitely what's going to happen, clearly. That's,
yes,
when,
sure,
when a writer writes in their novel that we're going to make this character into a villain and he's going to be the bad guy, you just believe it, obviously.
Yeah, obviously. I saw that and went, oh, thank you so much, Aoife, for telling me exactly what, yeah, you've told me what the answer is. I need to think no more about this.
Yeah, dude. I don't think it could be anyone else. I think you've already solved it. It's we're only you know, 10 minutes in. We've done it.
I'm on it. I'm on it.
All right. Well, speaking of the obvious mystery villain and the mystery, let's jump over to an interview with Aoife Clifford herself, And when we return, I will see if Cameron can solve the mystery of It Takes a Town by Aoife Clifford. You're listening to Death of the Reader. Stay tuned to 2SCR 107.3. You're listening to Death of the Reader. This is Herds here, and I am thrilled to be able to have a chat with Aoife Clifford, author of the comedy drama murder mystery It Takes a Town, which hopefully did not take a whole town to write. Aoife, welcome to the show.
Lovely to be here, Herds.
It's great to have you. Now, let's get into things. Your book is concerned with the grisly murder of Vanessa Walton, a child star who is a thriving career in the performance arts, at least, you know, until she's found at the bottom of some stairs. She's been inevitably drawn back home to her doom. Do you think that even the biggest stars can get away from the place they grew up in?
Oh, that's a very good question. I suspect nobody does, really. I think that, yeah, the little bits of everyone's compass probably points back home. I mean, I know that's the case with me. I've lived away from my hometown of Bathurst for, gosh, over 30 years now, and yet I'm writing a book based in Bathurst. So not that I'm the biggest star in the world by any stretch, but, yeah, I think childhood is so formative for everybody that what happens in childhood will stay with you. And, I mean, my last book, one of the issues, one of the characters has early onset dementia, and it always interests me, having experienced family members with dementia, that the memories that are the hardest to go are the childhood memories, and they're the ones that stay when a lot of recent memories, even your adult memories, leave you. It's school events, it's childhood friends. My grandmother was always trying to escape the house and get home to her childhood home in Ireland to catch the train back. And so, I think the answer is no. We never escape our childhood, no matter how big and important and however far away we think we are from it.
No, I think there's that obviously formative memories, and that time of relative innocence definitely stays with us. Now, I wanted to ask about Carol, right? She's our resident cop on the scene, and she's part of sort of the old guard. She dismisses Vanessa's death as definitely not a murder until she slipped a metaphorical note under the table by Janet, who's the town's spider on the wall. Why do you think it's important that murder in the town of Welcombe, not Bathurst importantly, start out as innocent?
I think part of it because it's a pretty good murder, so it's not obvious from the start at all. It looks like she's just fallen down the stairs, basically perhaps slipped on the stairs on some water because there's been a storm and there's been leaks. And so it looks like a terrible accident. I think also, and part of the thing I was thinking about, one of the things I was dealing with in this book was the idea of fame and being famous. And one of the things is we sort of forget that people are human beings as well. So somehow it's more shocking that a famous person dies than just your average person dies. And if you can remember far back as before the pandemic, in the year before the pandemic, you know, it was seen as absolutely terrible and a tragedy, and we couldn't quite understand it when, like, David Bowie and Prince died quite soon after each other. And it was, like, really genuinely shocking that these people were actually human in a sense. And so I wanted to kind of play with that idea that we don't actually we don't treat them as fully human somehow, that and I guess maybe it's the process by which we know them is a sort of a two-dimensional process. It's like through a screen or something like that. So we kind of treat them as if they're immortals. And so when something very human happens like death, it's sort of we can't quite deal with it in the same way. Now, Vanessa's certainly not on the Prince or David Bowie scale, but kind of to the town she is, because she's the most famous person this town has ever had. And they've lived with her fame the whole time for as long as she has. And so she is seen as sort of special. And so when she's found sort of at the bottom of the stairs, they can't quite deal with it in a normal way. And so I wanted to play with all the ways that we kind of deal with death, which is something probably as a society we're actually not that great with dealing with in the first place. So I was playing around with those ideas, a bit like Princess Diana, you know, died in a car accident, but yet all the conspiracy theories suddenly well up because it can't just be normal. So I wanted to play around with that idea that Carol's kind of trying to be sensible, going, well, there's no evidence here, and therefore is a bit initially dismissive of all the conspiracy theories that she's sudden that starts to bubble up from people like Janet, because she, you know, especially when you're a cop, you're always dealing with crazy people telling you crazy ideas. And so she's waiting to see some evidence. When she starts seeing the evidence that there might be something going on, or it starts to seem a bit odder than it initially does, then she comes to accept that her initial response was wrong.
I really enjoy Carol as a subversion of, and I mean, there's some debate about who the real detective is in this book, because it does take a town, as they say, obviously. But like, if we're looking for a detective character, a Sherlock Holmes stand-in, Carol kind of fits the bill. She's the cop investigating things, and she's competent. She's not a bumbling policeman like, say, Billy is. But I think it's interesting how you say that she's dismissive of the case, because she's also dismissive of her fellow police officers. She kind of forgets their names. And I think that Billy, who becomes her like police officer sidekick, we see him become more competent as the novel goes on. And I wanted to know, do you think this is due to Carol's raised expectations or the seriousness of the crimes, Vanessa's fame, or something else?
Yeah, that's lovely that you saw that, because I wanted, part of this book is I wanted three-dimensional characters, that everyone to be rounded and also to have your moment of competence and incompetence, because that is true to life and in different circumstances. So also I wanted to explore that journey with Billy. I also wanted to explore that journey with someone like Mer. So sort of people in the town who pretty much the town have written off in a sense. So in relation to Billy, I wanted, and it was with talking with there's a certain policewoman that I talked to, a senior policewoman who's now retired, and she talked to me about what it's like to go to a new place and to be responsible for people and how you judge that. And you see the cops that are kind of, her term was, and I think I might have used this exact term, was sort of put their pool cue back up in the rack. They're kind of, they're phoning it in, and people have just come to accept that. And Billy is that, you know, he's a good-hearted person, he's a kind person, but he hasn't really been encouraged, and in fact some of the other coppers are quite dismissive of him. And here's someone, Carol, who kind of says, no, I'm expecting more of you. And because he is a good person, he's doing his best to deliver that. And he does deliver in some ways, and he also stuffs up in other ways, but then in the big moment, he really does deliver. With Carol, that's interesting that, like you mentioned, like at the start, she's forgetting people's names. That for me is that classic, I'm new to town, I've got to work out as much as I can. Are you relevant to me in this moment? No, you're not. I'm going to put it where it's relevant. I'm looking at a body. I'm trying to work out relationships in this town, who owns this house, which becomes important, who are they related to, you know, where's it all at? And so she's one of those people that, you know, that classic person that, you know, within a year she's going to know pretty much everyone's name in town. She'll get out there. She's a good, solid policewoman. I deliberately, like, and part of it playing with, it does take the town, in a sense, to solve the murder. I didn't want that Sherlock character of the I'm the genius and I know everything and everybody else is the idiot and you just have to watch, you just reflect my glory, basically. I wanted it that these are good people like all of us in life. We're trying our best. It doesn't always work out for us, but if we work together, we'll get a bit further. So that was the idea.
It's like a whole town of Watsons.
100%. Which, I mean, come on, that's us, right?
We're
all Watsons, you know, good-hearted, interested, and hopefully getting better.
Doctors, of course. Yeah, of course. No, I get you.
I love it.
Well, I think that'll about do us for our time today. That was Aoife Clifford chatting about her newest novel, It Takes a Town. available at all good and reputable bookstores. And now let's jump back into the mystery section with Rookie Detective Cam, who's just about to pose a theory for this week. Stay tuned. You're listening to Death of the Reader. This is Herds and Cam.
Cam.
And we're discussing chapters 1 to 11 of It Takes a Town by Aoife Clifford. See, I remember the chapters this time.
Well done.
And we're in the mystery part of the show, which is terrifying, not for me, because, Cameron, you're going to have to solve this.
The
death of Vanessa. And also, I know we didn't really talk about this in the first part of the show, but there's also been a kidnapping.
I know.
Our main high school student character, Jasmine Landridge.
Not only a schoolgirl, but the stepdaughter of the local MP.
Yes.
I mean, if you're going to kidnap anyone, it's probably going to be of the richest guy in the town.
He's been kidnapped. So I need you today on Death of the Reader on 2CR 107.3, the greatest community radio station that ever lived. I need you to solve who, how, and why Vanessa has been killed, left at the bottom of the stairs with one of the lights smashed and the bucket of water and all that stuff that's going on there, killed during a horrible storm. And also, who has kidnapped Jasmine Langridge and how and why. So do you think you're up to the task?
I think I'm up to the task.
Good.
I'm very excited for this. I've been looking forward to it. I've been thinking about it.
Okay.
Funnily enough, my dad got into it as well.
Oh, goodness.
Had a bit of a break for lunch while I was reading it. And he's asking me questions. He's asking me questions about it. He's like prepping me. He's been prepping me for this Olympic effort that I'm now going to undertake. So
going for the gold medal.
Mm-hmm. I've got a crackpot theory. Do you want me to build up to it or do you want me to just be out with it?
Break the dam. What's your crackpot theory?
Break the dam. Okay. I think that the person who killed Vanessa works at the theater or in the arts in the town, maybe someone to do with the dance studio.
Wait,
for the following reasons.
Wait, do you have a name? A name? What do you mean? You need to have a name. Are you kidding me?
I think it was.
Okay, look, I'm willing to go with you on this.
Just come with me on this
make,
one.
If you can make a case for why the killer is an unnamed person that we haven't met yet in the early parts of the story, I'm willing to go with you on this, but I disapprove heartily. Okay.
I was so excited to bring this theory forth. I mentioned to you in the week.
I'm so ready.
I've got some insane theory for you, and you went, okay. Yep. Little did you know.
Little did I know. At least it isn't three children in a trench coat. Yep.
It's three adults in a trench coat because they had to reach the light bulb on the roof of Vanessa's.
It's
of
true.
Vanessa's cottage.
It's true.
So a lot of this is coming from the chapter in which Carol starts actually looking at the crime scene for what it is and not what she wants to see, which is an accident, and notices a couple of inconsistencies in the way that the crime scene is set up.
Mm.
So the first things first is the bucket at the top of the stairs.
Yeah.
And with the help of Billy, who seems slightly less bumbly in this particular chapter, which, you know, good for him.
Clearly out of character, clearly suspicious.
Yes. Notices that the bucket full of water set up to catch a leaky roof was sitting under a roof that was not leaking.
Mm.
There was no watermark on the roof.
It's an amateur mistake.
And also the light, which you said had been smashed, had not been smashed, but had been removed.
That's true.
By someone who had to be knowledgeable on, you know, lights and light installations.
Just like a techie at a theater production.
Just like some stagehand at a theater production.
Uh-huh.
The whole scene reeks of theatrics.
Mm.
The set has been dressed to look like an accident, but in reality, someone has been murdered by someone it was revealed by Beth that they were struggling for money. When Beth asked them to get the emerald ring that belonged to her mother.
Yep.
And it is revealed that the emerald in the emerald ring was pawned off by Vanessa for money, for quick cash, which I thought was interesting as well.
Yeah, but it had a lot of sentimental value.
Yes, a lot of sentimental value. So yeah, she must have been truly desperate for money at the time to sell off an item with such high sentimentality attached to it.
I would agree.
If I'm going to put a name on someone, I think it's Vanessa's aunt, that stingy aunt of hers.
Dolly. Yeah.
Dolly.
Dolly, yes, Fetling.
Dolly just didn't seem quite right to me either. I think she's theatrical enough. I think she may have had help. I think she maybe discovered, I think whatever my suspicion with Dolly is going to be from is because of something to do with money. There's a lot of money around Vanessa at the moment. So I think that sort of ties into Dolly's character.
And I suppose if you wanted to get a whole heap of money right now, the best way to get it would be to steal away the child of a very rich man,
yes,
property developer perhaps, and
yes,
then
yes,
blackmail him into taking all of his money.
Yes, all that shenanigans is, as I said, separate to the Vanessa murder. If I may quote from the book.
Of course, please.
Mr. Roland called the roll, which all teachers were technically supposed to do after lunch, though no one ever bothered other than Ivan the Terrible. The automated system had been down all week, so he ticked off each girl's name on his clipboard. There was a hesitation when he got to Jazz's. Brianna expected him to look up and glare at them, demanding to be told where she was, or tell them that, yet again, that when he was a student that he had a perfect attendance record, but instead he went on to the next name. Did he know where Jazz was? It's almost like Ivan Roland expected Jazz to be absent from his class.
Well, clearly that's because she's a truant. She's a climate activist. And as we all know, the climate activists never show up to class. That's like part of the deal.
Absolutely. You're always out protesting. Now, I think there's something going on there. I think there's a disagreement between Barton Langridge and Ivan Roland, as seen by Brianna outside the church, in which Ivan and Barton were having a quite uncomfortable and slightly heated conversation. I think that maybe there's some money issues going on there. Maybe Barton is withholding funds from the school. Maybe he wants Barton to fund something with the school. I don't know. I think there's something going on there, and Ivan has perhaps instigated a kidnapping of his stepdaughter in order to leverage Barton for something.
So your theory, just to summarize,
yes,
is that Vanessa was killed for money by someone in the dance industry, let's say, or the theater industry.
Yeah. Initially it was because she pissed off a stagehand and the stagehand just went back to get revenge.
Makes sense to me.
But based off some of the rules of murder mystery, I don't think it's fair for it to be someone unnamed off screen. So I'm going with Dolly as someone who, you know, wanted some revenge or money or both from Vanessa, pushed her down the stairs and had some assistance from someone in the family. I don't think it was, oh my goodness, I've almost forgot the interesting detail of the half-drunk champagne bottle in Vanessa's kitchen when she herself does not drink.
I mean, maybe she does drink and we just don't know. I mean, we know from Carol's investigation of the body that Vanessa has like a collapsed vein, which is usually indication of being like a drug user.
Oh, okay.
So maybe she was, you know, drinking and joking, you know?
Drinking and joking.
That's what I'm calling drugs right now. Joking and smoking.
Maybe. Yeah. I think I'm still going to stick with my Dolly theory. I think maybe Vanessa sold the emerald to pay for some drugs. Maybe was siphoning money out of the dance studio to pay for a drug or alcohol habit that she was hiding from the public eye, and Dolly found out and killed her.
Maybe Vanessa isn't the shining, sweet, sugary star that we all think that she is.
Maybe she is not.
Maybe. I guess we'll have to find out on the next section, the next episode, the next part of
awesome.
It Takes a Town by Aoife Clifford. That will be all for now. We will be covering next week on the show chapters 12 to 24 of the novel. So please look forward to it. And Cam, your theory this week has been absolutely flawless. No holes, no vagueness going on here. So I'm really excited to see what your next theory is. You'll obviously fake one next week.
I fully accept the feedback of vague, terrible theory.
It's always fun to see someone kind of take their first steps into the public sphere of murder mystery cracking. But for now, we will bid adieu. You're listening to Death of the Reader on 2CR 107.3, your Murder Mystery World Tour. And we will see you in the next one.
Woo!